They're back.
No, not Poltergeist. Something more realistically frightening. Spruce bark beetles. In the 1990s, 4 million acres of spruce were destroyed in south central Alaska, much of that damage on the Kenai Peninsula. In 2016, foresters started noticing an increase in beetle kill again. 200,000 acres in south central, with about 16,000 acres on the northwestern Kenai Peninsula. Last year, it was up to 400,000 acres and about 55,000 acres on the peninsula. The infestation is expected to continue. Spruce bark beetles are a normal part of the forest and usually serve as a natural process for thinning trees. Females burrow into a tree and lay eggs in the thin phylum layer between the bark and the wood. That's basically the plumbing system where trees move moisture and nutrients. The eggs hatch and the larvae eat the phylum tissue. They're voracious little buggers, and a single female can lay up to 150 eggs. When there's too much damage to the phylum layer, a tree effectively can't feed itself and starves to death. The beetles usually target damaged, blown down, and otherwise weakened trees. But when the beetle population explodes, they'll attack any tree they can find. Healthy spruce trees can often fight off an attack by producing pitch that pushes beetles out of the boring holes. But an attacked tree will be weakened and more susceptible to infestation if it's attacked again, especially if conditions are dry and it's also struggling with the lack of nutrients and water. While it's impossible to stop an outbreak, there are ways landowners can help protect their trees. As is often the case, prevention is the key to success. Curtis Stiegel is an arborist. His company, An Arboristic View, is based in Sterling. He gave a workshop for the Central Peninsula Garden Club in May about tree pruning and fielded questions about protecting spruce trees from the dreaded bark beetle.
All the bark beetles are kind of like between the relationship of the wolf and the caribou. We know the wolf culls the herd. Why does it cull the herd? The weaker animals. So we got 50 years of fire suppression, and Mother Nature's going to get its way one way or the other. And so the bark beetle is that. So the bark beetle, trees in the woods, when you got them too compacted, they fight for that nutrients and that water in the soil. Well, some trees are weaker, some trees are stronger. So the weaker trees, they actually put off a smell that the beetles hone in on. So when they fly through the stand, why do they hit that tree versus that tree? That's because that tree's weaker, and they go into that tree and cull it. And that's how we thin the forest, Mother Nature's way. And then when they go into the stand and the tree gets too many beetles in it, the beetles actually put off a pheromone and puts up a no vacancy sign like the hotel. And the other beetles flying into the area will go find another tree. Well, what happens is, like in the 90s, you get an overabundance, then they go into the stand and just decimate the stand regardless of the health of the tree. But a real healthy tree will actually sap out the spruce bark beetle, and it drowns them in their sap. So you'll see a tree that you see where the beetle's been in it, and it's really sappy. Well, it survived that attack, but the problem generally is it weakens the tree, and then the next year that tree succumbs to the next attack. You know, your trees that are out in the middle have, besides the turf, they got a lot more nutrients and water to themselves. They're stronger, they're better trees. How do you tell that? Okay, when you look at a spruce tree and you know last year's bud growth came out, the longer that is, the healthier that tree is. The shorter that is, the less healthier that tree is. And spruce trees program that growth this year for next year genetically. That's how spruce trees respond to drought, nutrition, water, whether too much, too little. Where deciduous trees, it's immediate. You fertilize, you see it in the growth immediately. You water, you see the response immediately. Spruce trees, you won't get a response for 12 months, depending on the time of the year. So if last year was a good wet year and they had lots of water, didn't have the drought stress, and on and on and on, then that tree this year will put off good nodal growth, and it's a healthy, good tree. And so when you look around and you start seeing those trees that are getting hit by spruce bark beetle, look at that node growth. What's coming off the buds and how long are they? And if you look at spruce bark beetles, they hit those groups of trees that are like four of them right here. And so I tell people, if you got a lot of trees around and you're wanting to preserve, you need to thin those out and cut those trees out of there. Or the beetles will decide to make that decision for you. So one way or the other.
These trees that are growing, like we're over in Sterling, and
We've got just all kinds of these trees, little trees, and they're way tall, you know. And that so, one, if they had more room, they wouldn't be doing that. They'd be growing out more. Then,
yeah,
maybe,
yeah. Yeah, they would.
Now, but cleaning then, those out, is that that's not going to do much. Once they're all growing up tall like that, it's probably not going to do a lot of good to thin them at that point.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking, you got more than a couple of trees in that 5 square foot, thinning them out is going to make them healthy, increase their nutrients. They don't have to share so much. And then they will start putting on growth and
actually,
you know,
go bigger.
Yes,
bigger,
yes, yes. What you're looking at is here, understanding soils. Our soils are geologically young. On the Kenai Peninsula, our soils average about 5.5 on your pH, which will, we're more acidic. And when you're looking at being more acidic, if you're too alkaline or too acidic, there are certain elements that are not easily pulled out of the soil by the plant or the tree. And so you have to understand that trees, if they can't get certain nutrients, then those nutrients, they need those to do certain biological processes within the tree. And then our soils here are very young. Like, you clear off a lot with trees, it'll have a high nitrogen amount of in the soil. And you go back and test that in 3 or 4 years and it'll have virtually nothing. So our soils don't hold a lot of nutrients. So when you're looking at a lot of trees in a group, they're already in geologically young soils that nutriently they're not supporting. And so there needs to be a thinning to get those trees at a certain spacing, mm-hmm. that they're not fighting for that nutrients. Mm-hmm. And in Arctic regions, we actually are more related to a desert in our amount of rainfall than we are anywhere else. So if we don't get our snowfall or our amount of inches we need, then that's why you see the fire season. We come into spring dry, well, those trees are dry. It takes 1 inch of water to go 2 inches deep in the soil. So when you're watering your tree, you need to think, how much does my pump out the hose? And how much do you know, you got to put at least 1 inch of water to go 2 inches deep to get your tree. A tree's water usage doubles and quadruples every 5 or 10 degrees over 42. So when you start seeing the leaves curling, like birch trees, you know, August, July, you see the leaves turning yellow and they're falling off, that's your warning sign. They're telling you. So the tree's now trying to conserve and cut back. And so go out and water your birch tree. That's the big one.
When you're talking about thinning one more time, do you go clear down to the ground and cut the tree off? Did you leave the roots and everything there? Because if you pull those, you're going to disturb the other trees around you?
At that young age, no. But yeah, you don't need to do all that work. Just cut them off.
At the ground?
Yeah, just cut them at the ground.
They'll walk out there for a while because they'll trip you.
Yeah. Yeah, spruce aren't going to grow any suckers, so.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
they don't do that like the deciduous trees.
It'll just go into the ground then?
Yes. Yeah, it'll decay. It'll rot.
Okay.
I've got a situation in my backyard. I've got these mature spruce trees. They're, like you said, 200 years old, but they're spread out, and they're very healthy. Okay. But I've got a group in the back of about, I'd say, 15 spruce. 4 of them got hit by spruce bark beetles. I noticed it a couple of weeks ago walking back there, and I can see the holes, and I can see where the bark is peeled off of these spruce trees. There's 4 in a group. I don't know if I should take them out right now, or maybe the beetles will leave the other trees alone because they've homed in on these 4.
Right.
Do I do it during the winter? What?
What's the best rule of thumb to go by?
Spruce bark beetle has generally 2 flights. One usually about end of May, depending on how temperatures warm up, and sometime about August. The August one obviously overwinters in the tree. And they actually overwinter in the bole of the tree where they're below snow line because they stay warmer and don't get froze out. So if we have a cold winter and no snow, the beetles, you know, they're going to get killed. They're going to get wiped out. You probably look around your house and you can look at your neighbor's lot, and 3 lots down, there's probably several dozens of trees that got beetles in them. Beetles can fly up to 1.5 miles. So with that being said, it doesn't matter whether you cut them down or not. You're still going to have beetles in your area. But what matters is the health of the trees that didn't get attacked.
Yeah.
And if they're healthy, they're not. The beetles are going to ignore those trees.
Oh, okay.
So it's all about the health of the tree. The tree is healthy based on water and nutrient balance.
What can I do for the other trees to help them?
Water them, fertilizing.
Okay.
When I say fertilizing, don't go out there and take high urea 25 or 30-00 and throw on the root systems. You'll burn the trees up. Uh-huh. Probably, you know, those tree spikes, they do work. They're not the best. But, you know, just doing something light, like an 832-16, putting it down, the nitrogen will turn to nitrate and okay. It will go through the soil profile. They do have tree fertilizers that I do use to put in trees, and it's a liquid injection into the soil. But when you start talking about doing that, the expense of it, and you go, oh, I got 40 trees, you can spray the trees with 7 or Carbaryl. It's a very high dosage, and you got to spray the bark, and you got to be able to, you know, probably spray at least 20 feet up the tree or 30 mm-hmm. to get good coverage, and you got to get good coverage. Well, good luck shooting through all those branches, right? So you got to have some sprayer with the power on it. And Carbaryl 7 will last, depending on the rain and the weather, will have a half-life of 5-6 weeks. So you can't just spray now. And I've had people say, oh, yeah, I sprayed mine 10 years ago. Well, that's done and gone. So you got to spray in mid-May, then you need to spray before the August flight again and protect the tree. And Carbaryl 7 does not cost a lot. I mean, most people don't have the sprayer to go, you know, 30 feet up. We had the spruce aphid, the green aphid, a couple years back in Homer that decimated the whole Kachemak Bay area. So I went down and treated a lot of trees down there. There is a product that you can inject in the tree that's a systemic, goes through the tree, goes in the needles, the aphids suck the chlorophyll, they die. Very environmentally safe because I wouldn't spraying everything willy-nilly in the environment. So we have these techniques, and the same thing can be done for the spruce bark beetle. The problem is the product that gets injected for a tree that size would cost you $60 to inject. And for the spruce bark beetle, it's double the rate. So you start talking, you got 15 or 20 trees in your yard, and you can see where that's going. The product that would help treat the bark beetle is called imensoprid. You can buy it at your local greenhouses, and you mix it in your 5-gallon bucket, follow the label for the dosage. You do a soil drench around your tree and you dump it. It's the same product that I inject, but the imensoprid is the one that we're having the huge discussion with as to the harm it's causing to the bee population and the bird population in the United States. But the thing with imensoprid is when it's injected into the tree or it's put in the roots, all the studies that have come out that the imensoprid, when it's applied those ways, there's that biological barrier between seed and fruit and flower doesn't allow for that product to transfer over. So the bees can't get it, the birds can't get it, nothing gets it. It stays on this side of that biological barrier to protect the trees from the insects that it needs to control. That's the neat thing about it. But we're applying it a certain way, soil drench or injecting. When you talk about broadcast spraying, that's a whole other story. So that's the product you're dealing with, is the imensoprid. And you can find it and you mix it in your 5-gallon bucket, do a soil drench around your tree, and there's a certain rate per caliber of the tree, you know, and getting in there. And it takes, the problem with soil drench is you only get about 65% uptake.
So the 832-16 you were talking about, fertilizer for the trees, is that something you dilute and do that drenched also?
That's a granular. Okay. Yeah, 832-16 is a granular fertilizer. Okay. So you just throw it out, it'll dissolve, and what happens is nitrogen transfers into nitrates, and then that's how nitrogen goes through the soil profile and it drops down to where the roots of the tree are.
And then just wait for the rain to take it down?
Mm-hmm. Or you can water it in. I know there's online places where you buy horticultural supplies. They got a root feeder, like you was talking about, attaches to your hose, and you can put the tree fertilizer in that root feeder, and you inject it down into the ground where the roots are, and you just kind of go around. So, you know, to go home for lunch while you're eating your sandwich, you do this quarter, do that quarter, and you can actually water and fertilize your tree. When you're dealing with spruce, the most of your finer root hair fiber type roots are going to be at that drip line. Just right there is going to be the best place to put all that. But, you know, really, if you got those trees that are your anchorage to your landscape, water them and give them some nutrients. And to keep them healthy is going to apply more than the other techniques.
Several state and federal agencies in Alaska have teamed up to create a website with information on mitigating damage from spruce bark beetles. You can find that at alaskasprucebeetle.org. And Stiegel can be reached at 262-7659. After the break, we see what's cropping up at the Farmer's Fresh Market. Stay tuned.
We all know the oil field and salmon make the central Kenai Peninsula go round, but what else is there? Coffee stands, healthcare, baseball, and look, coming up quick on the outside, it's cannabis. On our new weekly report, Econ 91.9, we'll talk to the people who keep the Kenai humming. Tune in to the 5-Minute Report every Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. here on KDLL 91.9 FM.
The Farmer's Fresh Market, open for the summer, June 5th, at the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank. It's open every Tuesday through September 11th from 3 to 6 p.m. Given how cold this spring has been, summer produce isn't ready for the market yet. But there are a couple vendors setting up each week, with more to come. On June 12th, Christina Land from Grace Acres Farm in Kisilov was at the market with her husband and sons. Though her vegetables aren't ready yet, she had raspberry plants to sell, greens, chicken eggs, and stalks of freshly harvested rhubarb. They also do butcher-ready pigs, turkey stock, and rabbits. When did you get your farm started?
We've had the farm part of it as far as the animals for about 3.5 years now. And then we got into the high tunnels. We put them up last year, and this is our first year to actually plant in them. So we're really excited. Our tiller broke down, so we've had to almost hand turn 7,200 square feet. But it has been fun, and when we do reap the benefits from it, it'll be that much more sweet.
So it looks like you got a crew behind you to help. Do you conscript the family for farm work?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We all work together as a family, and they work just as hard as anybody I've ever seen.
What are you hoping for your season? What other kinds of things are you planning on bringing to market?
Lettuces, tomatoes, carrots. Oh, lots of beets. We are doing almost an entire high tunnel full of beets because we found that there's a lot of people that love beets. And people have asked us, can you plant? And it's been more than like 10, so we said, okay, maybe we should probably plant a good bit of beets. So
that's kind of nice to know what the demand is. It's a bit of a risk to dedicate some ground to a certain crop and not another.
It really is. You're taking a chance, because what if someone else does it, or there's really not a market? But enough people have asked, and even Cadre has asked, can you grow beets for us? And I said, yeah, okay. How much? And they said, as much as you can grow would be great. So I said, okay. Gosh, I can't think of, oh, carrots. Boys, what else are we going to be growing? I can't even think. Oh, potatoes, tons of potatoes. Radishes, beets, potatoes, corn, all different kinds of lettuces, cabbage, broccoli, cucumbers, cauliflower, a lot of, our hanging baskets are just about ready. They're not as big as I would like them to be for selling yet, but we will have hanging baskets to offer as well.
And so you've got, let's see, butcher pigs as well, turkey stock, and rabbits. How does that fit in with all of the produce growing?
We actually use all of the, especially the pigs and the chicken, their manure, and then we compost it ourselves. Everything that we grow our produce in is made out of our compost. So it's just water and then our compost soil. So
yeah, it seems like, you know, having livestock like that is definitely added expense and added time and added space. But man, when you can work it into the whole farm project, it sure is nice.
Absolutely, because you wonder, where is all this going to go? What do I do with it? Because it's a lot of waste. And we said, well, why don't we just start composting it? I think eventually we will start offering it in bags as, you know, soil, maybe later on this season or next year. Not quite sure yet on that one.
Are you doing other markets too, or is this your only one for the year?
We're going to try the Wednesday market and the Saturday markets as well. And then you might see us sometimes maybe on a weekend down in Kisilov or up in town. You'll see we have a big truck and it'll say Grace Acres on the side. And then we can also offer tours of the high tunnels once they get up and established. People can call and asked to come out and see the high tunnels if they want. Off of Johnson Lake Road, off of Running Water, on the corner of Running Water and Linda.
So what made you want to go this direction? I mean, this is a commitment. This isn't something you get halfway into at this level.
No, it is not. Just for the self-sustainability, it's expensive to come in town. If you come into town, you better make sure that you're going to get everything you want. Otherwise, you're back in town every other day. So it's more for sustainability and to teach my kids and other kids, because they have friends that come over and they want to help. It just helps teach them dedication and just work, good work ethic.
Eddie Land is 13. He and his two brothers had books and a bag of snacks to keep them busy in between loading and unloading duties. What are you guys doing out at the farm? What does Mom and Dad have you working on?
Right now we're working on getting the high tunnels ready and just normal stuff, planting, getting all the crops ready, tilling, stuff like that.
It's summer break. Is there something else you'd rather be off doing, or is this kind of your summer activity for the year?
We do other things on the side, like we'll go swimming occasionally or come down to the farmer's market and do fun things, fishing.
And what's your role at the farmer's market?
Normally we're trying to educate people on what it is and trying to get them to buy our products. And when she's not here, either me or Noah will come up and tell them.
Well, it's a beautiful stand. It definitely speaks to a lot of hard work, it looks like.
Yes, it is. And like I said, it pays off when you reap the benefits of what you sow.
You can reach Grace Acres Farm at 907-727-4839. The Farmer's Fresh Market is a particularly good destination for families during June, since the Food Bank and Cooperative Extension Service have teamed up with a grant from Arby's to offer free planting workshops for kids. 15-minute hands-on lessons are given between 4 and 6 p.m. Tuesdays through June 26th. Paul Sutherland is the operations manager at the Food Bank and got the program started.
This was part of Arby's No Kid Hungry grant. And it's basically they're trying to spread the summer food programs for kids, trying to spread information about that. That was the biggest motivation, was to, you know, I think in the school year, something like 10 or 12 million kids are on reduced school lunches. But then in the summers, there's only like 1 million kids that are getting reduced lunches that are getting served. So there's like 10 or 11 million kids out there that aren't reaping the benefits of programs that exist, essentially. So part of it was kind of a spreading the word about what is available for the summer food programs in the area. And then we kind of morphed that into the planter boxes for the kids to kind of get them motivated into growing their own food. Because, you know, we have the hoop house, we have the garden here. That's kind of our philosophy. You know, we get the reclaim stuff, but we want you to be self-sufficient. We want you to at least try to get it done on your own. That was kind of the motivation behind it, was to inspire kids to want to grow their own food. The Cooperative Extension Service, they're helping us with kind of educating kids on what to do with their plants after they plant them, the correct ways to plant them, you know, and then we have it set up here so they can, if they're interested, then go check out what we've got going on in the hoop house here too, which they will help with also. So it's kind of a nice little partnership.
How's it been going so far?
You know, the farmer's market, I think it's just early in the season from what I'm hearing. People don't have a lot of product to put out there right now. So it's been a slow start. I think we did 12 kids with this program last week. Not sure where they're at today, but we're aiming for 25 each week. That was the idea. We're kind of calling an audible and just have walk in and do it until it's gone, kind of is maybe the plan. You got to adjust as you go, you know.
And is this open to any kids, or do they need they don't have to qualify for free and reduced?
Nope. It's open to anyone. We're doing 0 to 18, basically. So if you're under 18, you're welcome. Just bring your kids down.
Yeah, I mean, kids encouraged to get dirty.
Get your hands dirty, learn some stuff, exactly.
The workshops are free. They are open to drop-ins, but the Extension Service asks that people call 262-5284 to sign up for a time slot in advance, just to prevent having to wait in line. Linda Tannehill and Janice Chumley are running the workshops. Here's Chumley.
Who doesn't like planting things with kids? Kids are curious. You know, they want to know where their food comes from. They want to grow stuff. They want to get their hands in the dirt. So why wouldn't I volunteer for something like that? Every Tuesday in June here at the food bank, between 4 and 6, kids can come and they can plant a planter to take home with them. It's just a great little window size. And then learn how to harvest it, the sunshine, the water routines, how they would use it. And then they can take home food, which is pretty awesome. And you get to learn how things taste. Maybe you want to try kale this time and you haven't grown kale before. I had a class yesterday where all 18 kids said, I want to plant kale.
Wow.
It blew my mind. And it's great to know where your food comes from. It's really good to know that you have the ability to raise something to eat just on your own windowsill or in a small pot on your front porch. So it's really fun. And Extension is all about teaching. We are learning for life. So, you know, you just have to share that knowledge.
What's been your experience with the kids so far? Have they been pretty plant savvy or have you had some beginner questions?
A lot of the kids, this is the first time that they're actually planting something and they're planting transplants. Maybe they've planted seeds before in a school situation, but this is the first time that they're using transplants and finding out, oh, this is how you have to do it and be careful and how deep to plant things and stuff. So, and then there's a lot of, well, there's several children that have come through that are like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. I've done this before. So it's really, you know, you run into all skill levels, and it's always fun because there's a lot of enthusiasm for it.
And the plants that you're working with, are these pretty hardy, easy to grow?
So lettuces that keep a fairly smaller size. I grew some peas that only get to be 24 inches before they start producing peas, so they're really good for containers. There's small bits of kale. I have some leeks and some onions that can be grown in containers and then harvested. And I'm encouraging everyone to take home a seed potato. I have Alaskan certified seed potatoes along with how to plant a potato in a bucket. So come fall, you'll be eating potatoes and peas. And I did dig out some strawberries too. And so I have a run-amok strawberry bed at home. So in order to thin it out, and everybody's eyes light up. In fact, the first child that came to this last week walked over and he goes, are we planting strawberries? And I said, not today, but next week for sure, because what a great idea. So I took a cue from, you know, the first child that came.
The idea proved to be a popular one at the June 12th workshop.
Welcome to planting land. Yay!
Aurora, age 8, was all about the strawberries.
Are you the kind of girl that gets your hands dirty? Well then, go.
I just been hiking today.
Oh, good for you. You want to fill it to about here, maybe?
To the line.
Yeah, exactly. You've done this before?
No.
No. My goodness, you look like you've done this before.
Okay, I think that's good.
You think that that's fine? Okay. Here we have a choice of things to plant. Red lettuce. Green lettuce, more green lettuce. I have strawberries and peas. Do you eat any of those things? Strawberries.
I was hoping you have blueberries, but I eat
them. Everybody hopes we have blueberries, and they're just, they don't grow in a container very well. So do you want to plant all strawberries?
Maybe a few.
Okay. Would you like to select some? Have you ever grown strawberries before?
No. I haven't grown anything before.
Whoa, you're in luck, man. These are very prolific. I dug them straight out of my garden. So this is just an old stem up here. But these have really big roots. You see how they spread out.
So I need to dig it deep.
Yes, dig a good size hole for that. You're right.
I dug all the way to the bottom. That's as far as I can go.
Well, we don't want to go all the way down, but you want to make sure you bury all of them, right? And then you want to put soil up all around them. Give it a good pat. Pat it in there like you're putting it to bed and maybe you're making a little pancake. And then would you like to do another one right next to it? These will grow in there, you know.
I want three. One here, one here.
You got it, girlfriend. When you take this home, you need to think about where you're going to put it. Can't put it in the closet, right?
Because there's sun.
Yes! And it needs what?
So what we can do is
water.
Yes, ma'am.
My grandma already has a bunch of plants in my room, so I need to fit in.
Good for you, so you know. So these guys will grow.
Can you keep going?
They'll put out a bunch of new leaves, and then they'll put out this weird runner thing, and they're going to try to make another strawberry plant on that. You could snip that off, because when they put out a stalk that has a flower on it, after the flower comes the berry. This one's already bloomed. See, it's getting ready to see that. Yeah, see that? So after this blooms out, it's going to put a strawberry on here, and you'll get a bunch of little strawberries about this size that hang on there. If you take care of it and water it, you'll get berries this year. And everybody should grow a potato at least once in their life.
I just hold them, or because, ooh.
Ooh, see these things? Mm-hmm. These are called sprouts. And this potato will grow roots out of this end.
When you plant it, it'll grow more.
Yes. 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 You are a wise girl. And you're good to go. Thanks for stopping by.
To sign up for a slot in the kids' planting workshops, call 262-5824.
Call the Extension Service, register, and come on down. You're at the market. You're right here at the food bank planting stuff, and it's a great way to learn.
And that'll just about do it for this month's Kenai Garden Talk on KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoldotna. We've got time, though, for a quick look at what's coming up in the world of gardening. Local farmers markets and the Alaska Food Hub are still open to new vendors. For more information, visit kenaisoilandwater.org. The Kenai Saturday Market is held from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the parking lot at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. The Farmers Fresh Market at the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank is open from 3 to 6 p.m. Tuesdays. The Soldotna Wednesday Market is from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Soldotna Creek Park. And some of those vendors stay open later for music in the park. And Soldotna's Saturday Market is open from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the school bus turnaround at East Corral Street and the Kenai Spur Highway. The 2018 Kenai Loves Local Food Directory is now available. The directory makes it easy for visitors and residents to find and enjoy the Central Peninsula's increasingly abundant local food options. You'll find information on farmers markets, You Pick Berry Farms, guidelines for harvesting wild plants and mushrooms, small retailers featuring local products, as well as a list of local fishermen who sell direct to customers. The directory is available at local visitor centers, libraries, and online at kenailocalfood.org. And while you're on that website, you can apply to be a vendor for the Kenai Local Food Connections Harvest Moon Local Food Festival and Marketplace, which will be held Saturday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Soldotna Creek Park. And to get some ideas on creative ways to use fresh produce, visit a chef at the market. On Saturday, June 30th, Chef Quentin Mapes of Michael's Restaurant will be at the Soldotna Farmers Market. On Tuesday, July 3rd, Bobby Stelgis of Fine Time Cafe will be at the Farmers Fresh Market at the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank, followed by Kenai Catering's Steve England on July 10th, and Andrew Agosti, chef at the Flats Bistro, on July 17th. And that'll do it for this month's Kenai Garden Talk. We'll be back in July. In the meantime, you can listen to past shows on the Kenai Garden Talk page on kdll.org. We'll leave with a quote from Jim Davis, author of the Garfield comic strip. Vegetables are a must on a diet. I suggest carrot cake, zucchini bread, and pumpkin pie. I'm Jenny Nyman. Thanks for tuning in.